The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
How's everyone doing? Good. My name is Pat Kelly. I am the Community Relations Manager for Bank of America in Pennsylvania and Delaware, and we are one of the sponsors of the Free Library Festival over the next 2 days. And on behalf of the Free Library of Philadelphia and Bank of America, welcome to the third annual Free Library Festival. Bank of America is proud to be a sponsor for the festival and help provide 2 days of inspiring and fun-filled free events for the entire Philadelphia community. Celebrations like these unite our community with a burst of books, music, and inspiration. And I personally can't wait to see what today and tomorrow have in store. We've got quite a lineup for the festival. Today, you can catch readings from award winners, including Broadway actress Kristen Chenoweth from Wicked, and also Joyce Carol Oates. And don't forget to join us to watch contestants from Chicago and Philadelphia compete in the can't-miss first-person story slam. The theme of the slam is Mortified, so the event is sure to be entertaining. Full schedules are available right outside the auditorium, and I encourage you to pick one up. We have another great roster tomorrow. Olympic medalist Dara Torres, William D. Cohan, who's the author of the New York Times bestseller House of Cards, and Vicky Myron, author of Dewey, the small-town library cat who touched the world. They will all be joining us. And now, I'm very pleased to introduce our first guest of the festival, John Quiñones, co-anchor of ABC's Primetime, a 2020 correspondent, and the anchor of the popular series, What Would You Do? John has earned 7 National Emmy Awards, as well as the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Awards Grand Prize. In his new book, Heroes Among Us, John expands on What Would You Do?, which used hidden cameras to capture people's unscripted reactions to ethical dilemmas, and highlights courageous and compassionate everyday heroes he has come across in his life. In addition to the stories of heroes he has met, John shares his own tale, taking readers from his childhood as the son of a laborer and house cleaner to his career as a network anchor. Before we begin, I want to take a moment to ask you to silence your cell phones, and we ask that there be no flash photography. And now, please join me in welcoming John Quiñones.
Hi. Well, good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you. What an honor to be here. You know, if you had told me when I was a kid growing up in the barrios of San Antonio, Texas, that someday I'd be speaking at this very, very prestigious library, the first in the country, I would have laughed at you. I'm from San Antonio, Texas, and I had a dream when I was a kid growing up in those barrios that someday I wanted to be a reporter just like Geraldo Rivera on 2020. And back then, Geraldo was doing some amazing stuff. And he was the only one with a Latino last name. So as a kid growing up in San Antonio, I was just amazed at the stuff he did. And it gave me, I think, the impetus to think if someone like Geraldo Rivera could do it, then I could too. And there were very few Hispanics on national television at the time. But it looked like it wasn't going to happen because my family was very poor. We were migrant farm workers for a while, picked tomatoes in Ohio and cherries in Michigan. I used to shine shoes on Guadalupe Street in San Antonio to help the family. My dad was a janitor. My mom cleaned houses for a living. So this dream of mine seemed very, very far-fetched. But thank God there was a program when I was growing up, part of the Great Society programs of the Johnson and Kennedy administration, a program called Upward Bound. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah. Thank you. Basically, it was like a Head Start program for college kids. So while you're still in high school, this group of very wise folks picked 10 kids from every inner city school that showed some sort of promise. And for some reason, they thought my grades weren't that great, but they thought that I had some promise. And I was one of the 10 from my high school. And every summer of our high school career, we would go and basically get remedial courses in college prep subjects so that when I eventually did go to college, I would have an easier time of it. And if it wasn't for Upward Bound, I don't think I'd be standing where I am today. I'm a correspondent for ABC. I've been there 25 years now. Started with Peter Jennings. Wasn't he the best anchorman that we've ever had? Yeah. I'll never forget the words Peter had for me when I started as a reporter for ABC back in the 80s. He said, John, I was in Nicaragua covering the Nicaraguan crisis. I covered all of Central America because I speak Spanish. I was in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Panama, Honduras, Guatemala. That was my world. And there were all kinds of civil wars going on down there. And I remember one time I was trying to interview the president of Nicaragua, and he wouldn't give me an interview. And I called New York, and I called Peter Jennings, and I said, Peter, I was really bummed out. This guy doesn't want to sit down and give me an interview. And he said, John, don't worry. He said, don't worry yourself so much about talking to the movers and the shakers in this world as you report your stories. Don't worry about talking to the movers and the shakers. Talk to the moved and the shaken. And I carry that with me today. I'll read you a little book, a bit about, from my book. My family has been in the United States for almost 200 years. But in many ways, the first five generations of the Quiñones family never left Mexico behind, even as they embraced the stars and stripes, served in the military, and paid their taxes. If you would ever run into my mother, Maria, down in San Antonio, you might have thought she was visiting from the old country, given her limited English and Indian features, which, by the way, I carry. If she were alive today, many people would probably try to have her deported. Thanks thanks to Maria, I've traveled light years from my childhood, and thanks to that childhood, it remains rooted within me, giving me strength, direction, and faith. My mom was definitely my first hero. She taught me to be open enough to believe in the world's goodness, to believe in people. She taught me how to observe and learn in this way. And I've taught myself and others now that there are heroes among us. My mother only made it through the eighth grade. She cleaned houses all on the north side of town, the rich part of town, when she wasn't making sure our own home was spotless. I never heard my parents complain or whine about their jobs. I never heard them wish they had been born under different circumstances. My dad's sole purpose in life was to provide for us, and my mom's was to care for us. That was what success meant to Bruno and Maria. Now there are days when I get up in the daily grind, we all do, and so caught up that I'll get upset about something small, such as not getting a clear signal on my cell phone at the airport or someone cutting me ahead of me in line, none of which ultimately matters. It sometimes seems that we've made our lives so complicated in our search for pleasure and ease that we forget what's truly important. At these moments, when I think I'm just going to lose it, I remember my parents' daily grind. I remember their lives, how their days were so different from my own. They never had a BlackBerry breakdown on them, or they didn't have to complain about how their flight to Aruba was delayed or canceled due to bad weather. They rarely ventured outside the world of their parents. And yet, although their lives seemed simple, I envy how connected they were to their honor, to their dignity, their family, without these distractions. Their centered lives make sense to me now in ways that I could not have comprehended when I was a kid. Their example is the driving force that empowers me even today, and it's reflected in the heroes that I meet as a reporter today. They had a lot to do with my life. Thank you. You know, I didn't speak English when I was a kid, when I went to school. My first day at school, first grade, you know, the whole neighborhood, in San Antonio, I don't know how many of you are familiar with San Antonio, but 50, 60% of the population is Mexican-American. And so you don't have to learn English early on. And when on the first day of school, I had no pre-kindergarten, none of that preschool stuff. I went straight to first grade. And of course, my teacher only spoke English. And I remember sitting there, and at 10 o'clock, the bell rang. And everybody got up and stormed outside. So I did too, but I kept going, and I went home. I thought that the day was over, you know. My mother said, ¿Qué pasó, Juanito? What happened? And I said, it's over, you know. 10 o'clock, you know, 2 hours of school. I like this idea, you know. She grabbed me by the ear and took me back to Mrs. Gregory's first grade class. Then I tell you, I really wanted to be a reporter. I never gave up on the dream. I knew I wanted to do what I do now. I knew when I was 10 years old that I wanted to do this. I studied broadcasting. I remember my first job was as an intern at a country music radio station in San Antonio, and I hated country music. But it was a start. I was getting paid $2 an hour at this radio station, KKYX, and which stands for Kicks. I guess you have to be from Texas to understand it, but the DJs, the disc jockeys who played music on that radio station had horses in the back of the station to use in parades and rodeos. This is Texas, after all. And my job, part of my job, was to feed the horses in the back of the station. I was 18. I was in my first year of college. But at night, I would get into the control room, and I would record my voice, and I would play it over and over, like at midnight, practicing my delivery, because I had a really heavy Mexican accent. In Spanish, there is no SH sound. So I would say things like, iron my shirt, shine my shoes. It's a very common problem. So I would work on my accent and trying to eradicate it. But there was no one else at the radio station at that hour to help me, except the janitor. And his name was Pablo, and he was Mexican too. So I remember playing my voice. I would read a newspaper story on tape and then play it back and work on it. And then I would call Pablo in to give me his critique. And I read, Pablo, what do you think? How does it sound? He goes, sí, más o menos. You know, he was my first critic. And then from there, I worked in radio in Houston, Texas. I always wanted to be a reporter. I always wanted to shine the light that we have. It's such a powerful media, television, even radio, where you can do stories that need to be reported. We can shine our light on the darkest corners of the world, and that's what I've gotten to do. But I was waylaid in Houston for a little bit. I couldn't get a job in TV. Everyone had their one Hispanic reporter. No one wanted to hire more. And I was in the dumps, really. I was very depressed. But at the final moment, I got a fellowship to go study at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism, which I think is the best journalism school in the world. And I moved to New York City, like the Beverly Hillbillies, in the back of a pickup truck, all my belongings, and got to New York and got a master's in journalism. And from there, I got a job as a local reporter in Chicago. My first TV job, which is unheard of. You know, you don't go from San Antonio and start working TV in Chicago, but I did. I got a big break. And one of the first stories that I did, since I grew up near the Mexican border, I always wanted to do a story about what is it that makes people in Mexico and in Latin America and from any other country for that matter risk their lives, you know, swim across a river or trek across a desert in Arizona to come get a job as a dishwasher or a roofer here with really not that much money, illegal immigration. And I figured, you know, I want to do that story. I want to tell that story. I want to go undercover to Mexico and come across as a Mexican citizen and see what it's like. Get a job here as a dishwasher, go through the whole thing. And I sold the idea to my news director in Chicago. And I told my friends, I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm going to pose as a Mexican. And so, to which they all said, well, that's going to take a lot of acting abilities, huh? But I was posing as a Mexican citizen. And I found a smuggler, a coyote, they call him. And I paid him $300 with hidden cameras rolling. And he sold me a Social Security card and a fake birth certificate. And then they showed me where I was going to cross on the Rio Grande near Laredo on the border. And I went to the Texas side. I told our camera crew, we're going to be crossing here tonight at 7. And then I went back to Mexico and met up with a smuggler. We go to the banks of the river, and I was a little nervous because, you know, these guys, these smugglers, they know you are carrying with you all the money you've saved for this long trek to the U.S., and they could easily rob you, right, and leave you for dead on the banks of the Rio Grande. So I was a little nervous, but I'm a big guy. I thought I could handle it, and I did, and he was a nice smuggler. And you strip down, you put down to your skivvies, down to your underwear, and you carry all your clothes in a plastic bag so it's not wet. And then he pushed me on an inner tube across the Rio Grande, and the cameras were rolling on the American side. And it was it won me my first Emmy. It was one of the first stories that showed how people, you know, that's all part of being a reporter. Here you are, you can illustrate to the viewers at home, what is it like? You know, how treacherous is it and how does it feel? And I was able to relay those thoughts in my report to the audience in Chicago. And then I got a job as a dishwasher in Chicago this Greek restaurant. He had all these Mexican illegal immigrants working for him, and he had refused to pay them, the owner of the restaurant, because he felt, well, you live in the basement, you're getting free food. And he would say that he hadn't paid some of them in 17 weeks. And he said, you know what, if you complain, I'm going to call the immigration service. And, of course, they were afraid to complain. So then I come along, I get hired by him also as a dishwasher, and I sleep with him, and we're able to videotape their living conditions, you know, sleeping next to these boxes of food and, you know, dishware down in the basement, 7 other Mexicans with me. And I spoke only Spanish to the owner of the restaurant when he hired me. And then, of course, the next day, suddenly I appear with a camera crew in a suit. And I can only imagine how stunned the owner of the restaurant must have been, where I'm suddenly like, excuse me, sir, I'm really a reporter for ABC, for Channel 2 in Chicago. And we shut down the restaurant. We got the men their money back when we exposed this horrific thing that he was doing. But I'll never forget what my producer said when I swam across the Rio Grande. David Gelber now works for 60 Minutes, and he was my producer in Chicago. And he said, John, you're the first Mexican to swim across the Rio Grande and then go to his suite at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. I had to change clothes, you know. But it's been a wonderful life as a reporter working for ABC. Now I do this show called What Would You Do? Have you seen some of the episodes? Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad. It has been the most rewarding thing. We thought it's sort of a candid camera of ethics. That's what we like to describe it as. I don't know, for those of you who may not have seen it, we hire actors and we put them in these difficult situations where it poses an ethical dilemma for other people watching what's going on. For example, we'll have a couple arguing at the park. And it looks like the man might hurt the woman. He's yelling at her. He's shaking her. If you're jogging by or pushing your stroller by or walking your dog, do you become involved? Or do you yell at the guy? Do you physically step in? Or do you step away? In all of our scenarios, we've done dozens of them for What Would You Do? It really puts you in that moment. All of us think we know what we would do, right? We all will say, oh, I would get involved or not. But you really, what I've learned is you really don't know until you're put in that position. So it's been amazing, and the response to the show has been phenomenal. We're off the air now for a couple of months. We'll be back in August, and then I think we're coming back in springtime again. But we need to tell ABC that it's a show that people like, because the ratings have been great, and I don't know why they wouldn't bring it back. We're fighting still, though. But it's been wonderful. And I still get to do other stories. Last night, I don't know if you watched 2020, I was on with a story on pirates. Thank you. It was a little touch and go coming here today because we thought that we'd have to go to Kenya or Somalia to try to do that story. And I really wanted to. And you might think I'm crazy to want to go, but you know, as a reporter, when you see a big story break like that, you always want to go. It's like, coach, send me in. I want to go do that story. As it turns out, we didn't have enough time. By the time we decided to do the pirate story, it was already Wednesday, and there's no way I could have gone there and come back. So we did it out of New York, and we bought this amazing video taken by a crew from Finland. They went into Somalia and they befriended some pirates. And for the first time, it was the perspective from the pirate side of the story. We've heard all about, you know, the American victims, and God knows that was horrific what happened to Captain Phillips. But, you know, in this case, now we got a side from the pirates. Perspective. And they, of course, many of them are kids, and many of them are high on drugs, and many of them are saying, look, we're doing this because we have terrible poverty in our country. There's nothing else to do. Our waters have been fished out. And so we told all that story with a grain of salt. I mean, we also interviewed an author and other Somalis who said, that's not true. You don't have to. One wrong does not make a right. You know, you don't have to attack these big freighters who have nothing to do with your poverty or fishing. And so that doesn't make it right. And these guys, you know, have become little heroes, little rock stars in Somalia with all their millions of dollars. So it's an amazing story, and I want to go back there. Anyway, that's what, I still get to do stories that I like to do as a reporter. But for the last couple of years, I've been doing nothing but What Would You Do, which has been also very rewarding. As you know, we can talk about that. You can ask questions about it. But, you know, we tackle really serious issues. Racism. What do you do if you're at a bakery in Waco, Texas, and a Muslim woman walks in wearing her Muslim scarf, and the guy behind the counter refuses to give her service because he says that she looks like a terrorist? You know, do you, if you're shopping, if you're buying your own little pastry, do you get involved in that and try to correct him? I'll tell you a story about what happened when we filmed that. We've done one on Mexican, you know, day laborers. What if you're in a deli and the guy behind the counter, who's really an actor, we put him up to, we're talking in his ear, we're telling him to say these awful things, trying to see if the other customers who have no idea that they're on hidden camera, what will they do? And don't worry, there are no hidden cameras here. We're not doing it today. Anyway, I think we need to take some questions because I want me to sign books at some point. So feel free to ask anything. Yes, sir.
Writing for television and radio, mm-hmm. You have a very limited amount of time.
Yes.
Writing for books, you have to write much more expensively. Did you find that transition difficult?
Did I find the transition difficult, writing for a book versus broadcast, which is very tight? Yes, you know, yes. This is my first book, so I'm very proud of it. And when I remember when I looked at it, I thought about my mother who passed away 5 years ago. She didn't get to see it, and it just brought tears to my eyes to imagine what she must have been thinking, looking down from heaven. Yes, it was more complicated. It took me much longer than I thought. And the reason the publisher was all excited about doing this because he heard that I was going to be on the Oprah show, and Oprah sells books, right? So they were putting the pressure on me, and I had to stay up late nights in the last 6 months putting it all together and finishing it. I don't think it'll be my last book because there's so much more to say, but it was very difficult. It was much different than writing for television. In television, you write to your pictures. You know, you can't say very much unless you have something to illustrate that. You can't say the pirates landed on shore and they took their hostage. If you don't have some video showcasing that, then it's a little difficult. So it was different, yes. Yes, any other questions? Yes, ma'am, back there.
Legalities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The legalities on your program, mm-hmm. What would you do? They must be extremely complex.
Yes.
What are they? And could that be one of the reasons why your programs are spaced so far apart?
Yeah. It's hard to put them all together. It took us a year to do, you know, 12 hours of the show. So the legalities. We cannot film hidden cameras video in certain states. So in every state, I don't know what the law says in Pennsylvania, but you know, they could well say it's either a one-party state or a two-party state, which means that both parties need to know that they're being recorded. If it's a one-party state, and we love those because that only means that I have to be mic'd, but not the person I'm interviewing. And again, we really don't try to snooker anyone or embarrass anyone. We make it a point that whoever appears on What Would You Do signs a release. Of course, we don't pay people for anything. News organizations don't pay for interviews or anything. But we don't have to, but as a courtesy, we ask people to sign a release. If they don't want to be on television because they were embarrassed by what they did or did not do, we won't put them on television. In some cases, if it's very good, we will fudge their faces and still use it, maybe change their voice, so that they can't claim that they were that we embarrassed them by showing their image on national television. But most of the time, we don't use, you know, segments that people don't want to appear in. In the one in Waco was pretty amazing. We had that Muslim woman pose. She was an actress. She went into this bakery. The guy behind the counter is a racist. We told him to be a racist. And she walks in, and he starts saying horrible things to her, like, "We're fighting people who look like you in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, who knows what you're hiding under that veil? You know, I will not serve terrorists. It's my right not to do that." And again, we wanted to know what other people would say or do. And of course, you have people who just look, turn away. They're very embarrassed. They don't want to get involved. It's a very litigious society now. Some folks just walk away. Other people gave it the thumbs up. Other people said, "You're right, man." I remember this tall Texan with his pregnant girlfriend walked in, and he said, "Yes, sir, you're right. It's about time we take a stand." So, of course, then I come out from the back with the cameras in the open, and I say, "Hi, I'm John Quiñones. This has all been part of a scenario for What Would You Do?" And sometimes people get pissed. So, as he did, you know. So he starts running away from me in the parking lot, and I run after him with the cameras, and I say, "Look, sir, I just want to know why. Tell me why. I'm a reporter. Why don't you just tell us why you felt that she should not be defended, and in fact, that you should continue insulting her?" And he had only one thing to say to me. He pointed at the camera, and he said, you, John Quiñones, you're not an American." My family's been in Texas 7 generations, you know. I'm probably more American than he is. And yet, I guess it was his way of either putting me down because of the way I look or because of the questions, because I had the gall to ask these questions. He felt that was un-American. I should just wrap that up by saying, right away after that, we did it again, the experiment, with new people in the bakery. This older white man walked up and he said, "Excuse me," when he heard the racism, he said to the guy behind the counter, "Excuse me, if you don't serve her, we're all going to walk out of your bakery." And, you know, it's so cool. As we sit behind the scenes watching everything on monitors, on hidden cameras, it's just so inspirational. I mean, your heart warms when you see this. He doesn't know he's on camera. He's not doing this for money or fame. That guy had no idea that he was going to be on national television. He did it because his heart told him that this is the right thing to do. And he was in tears. And he said, "We're all going to walk out of here. You cannot talk to her." And he says to this guy behind the counter, he says to the racist, "You know what? My son just came back from serving in Iraq. And he was fighting so that this woman can have the right to dress the way she wants to and speak her mind." And we were all crying. I mean, we all stumbled out. And I said, "Sir, you know, I'm John Quiñones. This has been all part of an experiment. Why did you do that?" And he started crying. The guy behind the counter, the racist, started crying. Everybody. And he said, "John, there's just too much hatred in the world. We need to end that." Anyway, go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
I'm a nurse, and I've been to the Middle East, and I'm really alarmed at the quantity of hatred that's inculcated through the networks to the public. I had the best time. I traveled solo, alone, throughout Egypt. Mm-hmm. I went to a conference and then traveled the country and had the most hearty welcome, outstanding appreciation, and people said, "You're an American, let me help you." And I'm like, "Why?" And one guy said, You people don't come to us anymore. Your people hate us, and I want to help you across the street so that you tell your people to come back to Egypt, because not all of us are terrorists."
Wow, good
for you.
So
how do we change that with the media so that people can know my experience and other such similar ones?
Well, we need to do that. You're right. I don't see why we can perpetuate images like that. I think the new administration in Washington is going to force all of us to follow more of an open-minded lead, I think. Really, I hope so. Yes, sir. Go
ahead. So, with your show currently, which I've only seen a smattering of, okay, you have potentially volatile situations with the one you described with the woman and man arguing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you have a situation where, I know myself personally, I take violence against women abhorrently, so
to where I take it upon myself to physically intercede, I probably punched a guy.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it as an actor.
Well, I try to jump out of the van as fast as I can to stop you. I did. One time that happened. I fell out of the van trying to get out. And I'm all dirty and muddy. And what we do is we have an off-duty police officer standing very close by in plain clothes. So he looks like one of the other people at the park or one of the other people at the bar. And he's right there. And we're talking to him in his ear. And we're telling him, watch this guy in the black shirt. That's always a danger, though. I mean, we have to be really careful in doing this show. I know that if somebody pulls a gun or a knife, that could be the end of our show.
Yeah, not that I'm comparing it to your show, but there was that show, what is it called, Cheaters or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Even Dateline to Catch a Predator, which was, as you know, a very successful show also. One man that they had cornered in a house who was on the internet, you know, trying to lure a pedophile who happened to be an assistant district attorney in Dallas, Texas. When the Dateline crew arrived at his house before the cops, they got there before the cops, and they knocked on the door, and the man committed suicide inside. So, of course, the man's family blamed Dateline NBC for pushing him to that point. And To Catch a Predator is now no longer on the air. So we have to be very, very careful with these things. Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering if you think the local news can step up to the plate and fill in if and when we lose our local newspapers because of the financial problems they're having.
I'd like to think so. Can local news step in and, you know, replace the coverage that newspapers aren't doing now because of the cutbacks? I think some stations do. I mean, the station that I worked with when I was in local TV in Chicago, WBBM, was just a kick-butt broadcast. And with Bill Curtis was the anchorman, and he went to CBS later. A bunch of people who were local reporters became network correspondents. So it can be done. I think the audience demands that and wants that. Too often, though, local TV stations go for the flash and go for the pretty young faces on TV and go for the fun stories and the featurey stuff that they think in sweeps, you know, that period where their rating happens. They think that brings in more viewers. And unfortunately, they stoop to the lowest common denominator among viewers, and often they get the numbers, but they certainly don't get the quality. I would like to think that we can do that. Yeah, I hope so. Yes, sir.
I would like your opinion on, what's your opinion on the attraction of the darker side of human nature with your show and To Catch a Predator versus the positive aspect of human nature? Do you think that the negative side just sells more?
I guess it makes us appreciate the positive side that much more, right? When we, in every one of our scenarios, we see someone not do something, walk away or join in the racism or, God forbid, the bashing of whoever is being bashed on camera. They're really actors. They're not really being bashed. But I think when you see that, people just shake their heads. I was hearing somebody on the train this morning told me, when I see your show, I'm always yelling at the TV screen, telling someone, don't do that or do it or why did you do that? I think maybe it makes us feel better about ourselves if we see something evil being done. That's part of it. Part of it is that train wreck idea that we love to see someone else do something really stupid or dangerous. And then along come the heroes and just make it all the better. Yes, ma'am.
I want to thank you for your show. Up until that time the show came on, my family thought I was an alien because I'm the one that got out of my car and stopped a fight on the side of the road. I'm the one that would get in the middle of everything. And right? This is my daughter. She'll attest to that.
Your daughter's very embarrassed right now.
I think this show should be implemented at an elementary school age, that it should be introduced into our schools to teach our children at an early age these feelings.
They're doing that already. Some schools we've sent DVDs out of the show, and some schools are already using that as a primer.
I personally would like to thank you. My thought is if you touch one heart, or maybe even two, by doing that show, then you've done what you're supposed
Call
to do.
Call ABC doing. Television in L.A. Tell them you want the show back.
I certainly will.
Some of them are really fun. You know, some of the scenarios we've done are, they're not all so dark and serious. We did one, what do you do if you're at a restaurant and you see your girlfriend's husband with another woman? do you tell your girlfriend when she shows up? There were actors, the couple, we put them up to it, of course. But the husband's back there making out in the back room with some woman. And, you know, here comes his wife having dinner with him. And then he leaves quickly when he spots her friend. But then his wife comes in. Does her friend tell her, you know? And then what if she's pregnant? What if, you know, if she's in a, you know, precarious point in her life? We've done others where, let's see here, we had someone at a bar put in a powder in a drink of his date. So we had a couple come in. It's the guy, when she goes to the ladies' room, they're on their first date. He, in kind of full view of other people, puts something in her drink. Now, when she comes back and is about to drink that wine, if you're there, will you tell her, this guy did it? You know, what's most impressive is that women are always the first ones to step up and get involved. Really. Just throwing caution to the wind, you know, and... Yes. She was like 5'5 and 90 pounds. And she got between the thugs and the victim. It's right. It was unbelievable. I mean, it's so impressive. It's something about, I think guys worry that things might get physical. We worry that if we get involved, it'll really turn into a fight. Maybe that's just an excuse, right? But women, there's a book called The Female Brain. And in there, they talk about how in these quick decisions, I guess because of your maternal instincts that women have, and I think some men also have strong thoughts like that and feelings and do get involved, like you. You would step up for the guy fighting with a woman. But women are much more quick to almost instinctually get involved. All right, one more question? Oh, we got to end it. How did it go so fast? Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.